Welcome to My Life Chassidus Applied, episode 456. This program is in merit of Baruch Ben Yomim Ben Menucha Lana and Miriam Baschaya Sara Altoiz, Yekusil Ben Leah Rachel and Rachel Bas Liba Farkash, dedicated by Pinchas Todres Ben Miriam and Sara Bas Rachel Altoiz. So today we can say good Yomtiv, being that it's Yud Gimel Tammuz, which together with Yud Beis Tammuz, Yud Beis Yud Gimel Tammuz, is the Chag HaGeula, Chag HaSimcha VaGeula of the Friedrich Rebbe. Yud Beis Tammuz was also the Friedrich Rebbe's birthday. But Yud Gimel Tammuz, together with Yud Beis Tammuz, is considered the Geula. Why? That's the question. Why is the Geula of Yud Beis Tammuz celebrated also on the next day? The technical reason is because when the sentence of the Friedrich Rebbe was commuted from exile to total freedom, it was a legal holiday in the former Soviet Union. So the legal, technical getting the papers that freed the Friedrich Rebbe came the next day. And therefore, the actual Geula was on Yud Gimel Tammuz. But Yud Beis Tammuz was the designated day. Again, it was pushed off due to the holiday. But everything is Hashgacha Pratis. The fact that we call Yud Beis Yud Gimel Tammuz the Geula, you have to say, not just because of some Soviet technicality. So most likely, I've never heard the explanation by the Rebbe, maybe the Rebbe did speak about it, but most likely the thing that most jumps out is based on a question that the Rebbe asks about Yutes Kislev. The famous letter, after the Alter Rebbe came out of prison, he wrote to his mechutin and colleague, Lev Yitzchok Baidichev, he wrote a letter about today being the Geula, and that's when I said, Padev Shalom Nafshi, is when I heard the news that I'm being freed. And then he says that today is a day that le'ena kol ha'amim v'chol ha'sarim, and the eyes of all the nations, of all the ministers, they saw God's hand. Of course, the question is, Yutes Kislev is a Geula of a Rebbe. Spiritually, it was the vindication of the spreading of Chassidus Chabad that the Alter Rebbe had begun. So why is here relevant to know that the Amim, the nations, the ministers? And the Rebbe explains, because the kavon of spreading Chassidus and spreading Torah in general is not just for the Jewish people, it's to transform the world. So when the world recognizes that significance, it's part of making the Dira B'Tachteinu, of transforming this very material world that the world itself recognizes. So in that sense, even though I could say Torah is higher than the world. Alpaim shana kodma Torah le'elam. The Torah precedes existence. We're above existence. But yet we need to transform existence. So in the Geula of Yud Beis Tammuz was a similar idea, as we discussed last week and elaborate a bit more now as well. It wasn't just that the Friedrich Rebbe was freed from all the accusations. It opened a new tzinner, a new channel, as the Rebbe explains, that we can overcome any challenge when it comes to spreading Torah and Yiddishkeit and Chassidus. And even a mighty empire that was such opposition, especially coming from the Jewish enemies, as the Friedrich Rebbe writes, that they come to recognize that no, the Friedrich Rebbe prevails. So therefore, the fact that the legal holiday of a country like that affected the Geula actually turned the Geula into 2 days instead of one. The Geula came the day of Yud Beis Tammuz, but the actual when the papers were delivered, even though you could say they're just a technicality, no. It means that even from the legal perspective of the Soviet Union, in all its darkness and all its vicious cruelty and oppression of Jews, also in that legal system was recognized this day of Geula of the Friedrich Rebbe. Whether they knew it or not, on that level is irrelevant. Just like the ministers may not know all the significance, but they saw it. And it became part of a legal process, even in such a cruel empire like the Soviet Union was at the time. So it just emphasizes for us the lesson. What does that teach us? It teaches us that no matter what the circumstances, it's not just two tracks. You're a Jew at home, and then you have to deal with the secular world in the street. No, it's one Hashem Achad, there's one God everywhere. And even in the darkest of the dark, you can also find godliness. In a famous sikhiv that Rebbe delivered on Shabbos Parsha Chukas, connecting to Yud Beis Tammuz, Tov Shemem Ches, Rebbe speaks about the Eneid Melvade, famous story that when the Friedrich Rebbe left prison and went to Kastrama, officially for the first 3 years exile, and then that was commuted, so Mechol Dvorkin and Chosid went to Kastrama, and he was making somersaults and singing and dancing with the nigun Yet Net Nikava, Krami Ova Adnava, which means Eneid Melvade, basically. Nothing but God. And the Rebbe asked the question, how's that connected to the Gula? Because that was the Gula. It's to reveal Hashem Mem as the truth of God, not just in a shul, in a beis haknesses, in a beis hamedrash, not just on Yom Kippur, not just in Eretz Yisrael, not just by the Holy of Holies, but in the very darkness of the world, in the abyss itself, to also recognize that everything is Hashem Echad, and that even they recognize him, they had to release him. So making it as part of that, so even the legal system of an unethical empire, let alone one that is based on the laws of the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Ne'ach, recognizing divine truth. So it's a lesson to all of us, no matter where you are. It's about finding the God within everything, the godliness within everything. That's the ultimate message of Yud Beis Yud Gimel Tammuz. Why does the Friedrich Rebbe write that this was the Gula for all people, not just for him personally? Or someone else puts it this way. Did the Friedrich Rebbe once say that his liberation at Yud Beis Yud Gimel Tammuz was not only a personal liberation for him, but it was Hashem giving the energy of the liberation to everyone in the community? How exactly do we receive and harness this energy? Is it in a similar way when one family is celebrating a simcha and the whole community comes and dances at the wedding and feels the joyous energy together with the family? So let's take one at a time here. Friedrich Rebbe absolutely said it, wrote it in the letter, the classic famous letter, the first year, Tezvav Sivan, the day he was arrested. A year later, Tofresh Peches, he writes it in a letter, Loi Oisi Belvad Gol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not I alone did God redeem on Yud Beis Tammuz, but everyone who loves and cherishes Torah, B'chavei Torah, Shemri Mitzvah, and even a Jew, Yisrael, Yisrael, that Rak B'Shem Yisrael Yechuna. That is just his name. Or nickname, he doesn't see it as a primary thing, it's just a name that he's called. That means the entire spectrum. And we discussed why. Because the Gula Yud Beis Tammuz was not a personal matter. Why was he arrested? As he writes in that letter, because of the Malshinim, about those that informed on him, who hated and despised the spreading of Torah. They could not deal with it. They couldn't tolerate it. So the Gula is in that matter. It was a matter of the day were their resistance was overcome, so now the celebration is of Arbotzes HaTeir, that who prevails? The spreading of Teir, even more than before. And that's something that every Jew, and that like the Friedrich Rebbe says there, even a Jew, B'Shem Yisrael Yechuna, because everyone's Tomim Libay, his heart is completely connected to Teir Mitzvahs, even if he may not be aware of it, as the Natsich and Chukas, Tov Shemem Ches explains the connection. That it's not just that everybody deep in their hearts connected. That the Geula helps them connect no matter what the concealment may be of the animal soul. Yitzrei Husha Unsei in the language of the Rambam, the end of chapter 2 of Hilchas Gedishin. Whatever it may be, it ultimately, the Geula itself broke open the door that no matter what the resistance may be, whether it's from without or within, whether it's the enemies outside or the enemies within, Torah Mitzvahs vanquishes. Prevails every negative force. So, in the context of the next question, how exactly do we receive and harness this energy? So, the Friedrich Rebbe continues that therefore this day and Yud Beis Yud Gimel Tammuz designate for a time of Hiseiris and Hisvadiyes, a day of inspiration, awakening, stimulating ourselves through a Farbrengen, coming together, celebrating in unity and taking on resolutions in what? In Arbotzes HaTeir, and spreading Teir. Indeed, in that year, Tofresh Peches, the year, the first anniversary of Yud Beis Tammuz, the Friedrich Rebbe gave out a maimer. Asara sheyeshvim sheiskim b'teir, shechina shruya b'neihem. To learn Teir together in a unified way and increase in our commitment to mitzvahs with kavana, davening, and of course spreading harbotza satera, because that's the essence of the whole geula. The golus, both the imprisonment was trying to prevent that, God forbid, and the geula is making it blossom even more. And the Rebbe explains that's why we see after the Beis Gimel Talmud, the harbotza satera, the Friedrich Rebbe. And that would then, of course, only accelerated afterwards, coming to America, and then the Rebbe, Tovshin Yud Anan, has only grown, blossomed, and branched out in both quantity and quality in unprecedented ways. That's how we harness this energy. Yud Beis Yud Gimel Talmud, Moed HaMoedim, the holiday of holidays, as it's called, gives us that power. And it's not just a family celebrating another family simcha. First of all, our Rebbe is not just an individual, he's a neshama klolis, hanosi hu akel, so his simcha is all our simchas. But here we have an additional, the whole geula was not a personal thing. Even though there's no real things as personal of the Rebbe, but relatively speaking, it was about his communal activity, his global activities of spreading Torah. So it's far more than just that, than a personal joining, even though obviously simcha vonid is a simcha volid. And of course, all this gets accentuated by the fact that Yud Beis Talmud is also the Friedrich Rebbe's birthday, Mazal Gever, special energy that gives that power, the power of a birthday of a Rebbe. Another question regarding Yud Gimel Talmud, or in general Yud Beis Yud Gimel Talmud, can you please ask Rabbi Jacobson to give a brief synopsis of the Maimer the Friedrich Rebbe said in the main synagogue in Moscow, which caused agents of the Yevsektsia, that was the Jewish communists, who were secretly listening to the charges against the Friedrich Rebbe, which caused them to get arrested and ultimately freed on Yud Beis Yud Gimel Talmud. Thank you. Yes. So the Rebbe speaks about this as well. Famous Maimer, V'kibala Yehudim Tofresh Pei Zayin. This was Purim Katan. That year was a Shana Muberes, a leap year. And Purim Katan, Friedrich Rebbe was in Moscow, and he delivered a Maimer, a big classic Maimer. It's printed today in Sefer Maimorim Tovshin Yud Aleph, of course also in Tovresh Pei Zayin. The Rebbe has footnotes to it. And in this Maimer, the Friedrich Rebbe speaks about many subjects, but the main thing is the power of children. Power of children. A little background. When word got out that the Friedrich Rebbe is going to deliver a discourse in 1927, in the throes of the darkest moments, when they were doing everything to oppose and to try to stop the Friedrich Rebbe from doing his holy work. And remember, at that point, he had already appointed secretly the 10 Krisis Bris, a minion with the Friedrich Rebbe, 9 and the Friedrich Rebbe. Friedrich Rebbe said, I called in Junge Light, that will be Meisa Nefesh to the last drop of blood to continue to maintain and perpetuate and make grow Yiddishkeit despite all the decrees and all the close downs and all the challenges that the communists were fighting actively against all this Yiddishkeit. So he was saying this Maimer. So when word got out, spies were sent to hear what the Friedrich Rebbe, and Friedrich Rebbe was told that spies are coming to listen and see what he's saying, and it could have grave consequences. The Friedrich Rebbe said the Maimer, and in it he speaks about the Gzeder time of in time of Ochuz, that what happened was that they closed down the shuls and they closed down the schools, similar to what the communists did. And yet was this voice of the Tanei Kashel Beis Rav, Mipi Eilim V'yenkim Yesada Te'ez L'Hashbis Eiv V'misnakim, Friedrich Rebbe declared. From the mouths of babes, of sucklings, will come Yesada Te'ez, the foundation of Eiz, Eiz is Teira, Ein Eiz El Teira, L'Hashbis Eiv V'misnakim, to eliminate, annihilate, obliterate Eiv V'misnakim, the enemy and the ones that are taking the vengeful ones against Teira Mitzvahs. That's where he put so much focus on the education of children. And this was, of course, the biggest thorn in the eyes of the Yevsektsia, because they wanted to close down the whole thing. And children were the future. That was indeed the battle. So the Maimer is a lot about the Mesiras Nefesh of Mordechai, of Purim, Maimer of Purim Katan, the Mesiras Nefesh, that Mordechai went and gathered the children to say Psukim, and that was the way, that was a big force that ultimately destroyed and overturned the Gzeira of Haman, Oyev Misnakim, the enemy of the time. It was very clear that Friedrich Rebbe was describing the situation then in 1927. And this is one of the factors, maybe the final straw that got them, that they finally felt that they have to eliminate this enemy, quote unquote, the Friedrich Rebbe. And in turn, of course, was the exact opposite. He was arrested, but what happened? He was vindicated. He won over, exactly like the same story. So this only emphasizes not just Harbotzes HaTeira in general, spreading Teira, but also especially the education of children, who are the guarantors of Teira, because they are the future. So that's part of this discussion, and part of the myths and significance and lessons we learn from Yud Beis, Yud Gimel Tammuz. As we go into the summer in this part of the world, children are going to camps and other ways that they're being educated. So this just emphasizes Yud Beis, Yud Gimel Tammuz, this strong critical emphasis we have to put on focus on the children being inspired with passion in Torah and Mitzvahs, because this is the power from Elim V'Yankim, even from the youngest age, to eliminate any enemy, any adversity, and on the contrary, to transform them all into positive forces as we march toward the Geula. So that is covering Yud Gimel Tammuz. Let us now go to Parsha Pinchas. So the Rebbe, many sichas, connects Yud Gimel Tammuz to Parsha Pinchas, because it always comes in that period from Chukas Balak into Pinchas. What's Pinchas? Pinchas is the Kanoi. He didn't just follow the law, he went beyond the letter of the law to sanctify God's name. Exactly what the Friedrich Rebbe did. There are a lot of things the Friedrich Rebbe didn't have to do. But he felt in a time of Gzeira, a time of Arkas of the Messana, a time of when there was so much pressure and efforts to obliterate Yiddishkeit, God forbid, he went over beyond the letter of law in challenging it. I remember one sikha when the Rebbe spoke, beautiful sikha, I believe it was in Tav Shemem Gimel. Tav Shemem Aleph, Tav Shemem Aleph, 1981. The Parasha Chukas is also about Lamaila Meseichel, Chukah, Mesiris Nefesh, and said that when the Friedrich Rebbe was told Gimel Tammuz that he can go to Kastrama, he asked, when will we arrive by train there? So they said, after Shabbos. He said, no, I'm not going to leave. Now we all know, Pi Halacha, that if you go and start traveling a few days before, you can travel on a train. And especially, P'koach Nefesh, Reiche Kol HaTeira Kulet, P'koach Nefesh Mamish. One more day he stays, anything could change. And yet the Friedrich Rebbe didn't go. And the Rebbe explained with the story in Parsha Chukas, with Moshe, because a Moshe leader, everybody's looking at. He understood what they wanted. That people would say, oh, the Friedrich Rebbe went on a train to save himself. Even though, if halachically, you can find Hatterim and explain it, but a leader is on the highest standards. When the Moshe Rabbeinu just changed one word, instead of speaking to the stone, he hit the stone. That was considered something great for a Moshe. Every little subtle thing, when the eyeball, a piece of dust on the eyeball is very irritating, not like a piece of dust on your finger. So the standard of Kiddush Hashem for a leader is far, far higher, and the Friedrich Rebbe exhibited and demonstrated that same type of total. He said when he went into prison, I will not compromise anything. He went beyond. Now usually you say, okay, in a situation like that, let me try to make it as easy as possible. No, the exact opposite. For his own pride, for his own connection to Hashem. So the attitude of Pinchas that you have once in the Torah, a person, he saw God's name desecrated, God being desecrated by Zimri. Kuzbi, what did he do? He didn't ask questions. He just went ahead and did what he had to do. We discussed other times how he's allowed to do it. There's discussions about that, whether he established a Sanhedrin. Some say he did that. Kanoim Pregimbe. But you see that Torah does not necessarily advocate zealotry, which we'll talk about in a moment. So the first lesson we learned from Pinchas, what is the general lesson from this chapter? That there are times you have to have that type of Mesiris Nefesh. We're not talking about going sparing people, God forbid. We're talking about in positive ways. Where you don't just do the minimum, but you go the maximum, especially when there's a challenge. When there's some gzeda, there's something that decrees. Today, thank God, we don't have such gzedas. We can learn Torah, teach Torah, send our children to school, to Jewish schools, Altaras HaKadosh. But still, everyone has their moments where there's something that the clip of our times, it could be materialism, could be prosperity, comforts. So now you have to go back, go and say, yes, there's comforts, great blessings. But don't ever let it cause you to be apathetic. You have to go to war against apathy. And that's the idea of a zealot, a kanoi in Gedusha. That's lesson number one, as we learned from the Friedrich Rebbe. Is there any room for zealotry in Judaism? So you could ask the question, is there any room for zealotry? Someone writes this question, are the people in Israel who throw rocks at cars on Shabbos emulating the zealotry of Pinchas? And if so, should they be rewarded with priesthood as Pinchas was? The answer is absolutely not. First of all, as I said, Pinchas was an exception, and he was actually a man of peace, not a man of aggression. That's why he got the Bris Yishalom. God gave him the covenant of peace. It seems like, is that commensurate to what he did? Because it wasn't coming from zealotry, it was coming from devotion to God. So you have to be very careful where you cross the line from devotion to God and your zealotry. There he was, Bekanes Kanesi, he took on God's cause. And you don't find ever again that you see this as a path. Zealotry is always rejected, if not outright crime. Take the law in your own hands, it doesn't work that way. Pinchas had, he had a Bezdin, he had other ways that he was able to do it. And regardless, it was an exception. So zealotry in Judaism, yes. You know what? In Avos Yisrael. You want to be zealous? Take the biggest mitzvah of all. Rabbi Akiva says, Avos Yisrael, Zeklal B'Teira. This is the fundamental principle of Teira. Hillel says it, Zui Kol HaTeira Kula. This is the entire Teira. Don't do unto others that you don't want done to you. V'idach Perusha, Zil Gemer. The rest is commentary. You want to be a zealot? Take Avos Yisrael, find every Jew you can meet, and show them extra love. Extra avos chinam, extra love in ways that are unconditional love. Doesn't have to have a reason. I remember someone who came to see me. He was looking to raise money for a mikveh or a kollel in Meir Shearim. He was dressed like a zealot and talked like one and spoke like one. The whole works. He wanted to mention a few names of people he heard that I know, but would I introduce him? So I said, who are you? So he started telling me. Called himself a Charedi, a Kanoi, he called himself, which is a zealot. So I said, in what part of Torah are you a zealot? And he looked at me like, you know, isn't it self-understood? I said, no, I'm not sure, you know, where, which mitzvah say you a Kanoi? You know, clothing, how you dress, length of your payas, why, what exactly? So he started telling me, what are you talking about? Torah, mitzvahs. So I said to him, what about the mitzvah, the biggest mitzvah of all? He said, which one are you talking about? Avos Yisrael. Started like dismissing like that. I thought I was making a joke. I said, look, I understand you think you're a Kanoi. If you could show me Kanois in Avos Yisrael that you're doing, I'm happy to introduce you to anyone. I'll even go with you. He was so not bedaraduan, he was so completely didn't know what I'm talking about. Like by him, Kanois would be things that are, I guess, shiurim, measurements of tzitzis, tznius issues, you know, things like that. But like the you say this, I didn't know if you could apply that. So I'm not here to be critical. It's not a Lashon Hara thing. I'm not saying names. But sometimes you have to understand Kanoi is Kanoi. You want to be Kanoi. Kanoi in Avos Hashem. Absolutely. In Yiras Hashem. Not Kanoi in other people's cheshbon. You know, people zealot about other people, judging them, expecting from them, demanding from them. That's not what a zealot is. That's not what Pinchas was. Zimri did something which was a grave crime. A leader should stand up and desecrate God in such a way publicly. He wasn't talking about Zimri's going around. You don't find that Pinchas was going around looking at every person's details of their lives and saying, ah, I got you. Definitely not throwing stones at people who drive on Shabbos and so on. So basically, Avos Yisrael is where zealotry should be directed and guided. That's where real kanois is, if you want to be a kanoi. In general, the Rambam says the way is the derech ha-mitzua, the middle path. Not extreme right, not extreme left. Except if a person has gone or to extreme one way, sometimes you have to go to the extreme the other way to balance out, to get back to the middle. But if you really want kanois, there's plenty of areas where we can show love to the people that we should show love to. Go out of our way, lefni mishur sadin, milse de chasidusa, midis chasidus, a chasid that goes lefni mishur sadin. The Alter Rebbe was asked, how do we know that? So he brought the raya from Gemara, that it says, when cutting one's nails, a rosha just throws them out, which is a sakana for somebody in certain situations to walk upon, so he doesn't care. A tzaddik, it says, buries them, so nobody shall walk on them, but it could still be dug up. And a chassid serfon, a chassid burns his nails. Now burning a part of what was once part of you is also a sakana to you. But when you burn it, no one else can be hurt. So he's ready to forego his own comfort, his own convenience, to make sure that nobody else will be hurt. That's a chassid. So there's plenty to go in the Lifnei Meshurat HaDin in that kav, in that direction. Okay. Next question. What was unique about the complaint by the daughters of Tzlofcha that Hashem granted their request, unlike other instances when people complained? What was different about the complaint by the daughters of Tzlofcha that Hashem and Moshe agreed with them and granted their request, unlike many other cases where people complained and Hashem got angry at them for complaining, so he sent plagues of snakes to bite them, like in Parsha Chukas? Was it perhaps because the daughters of Tzlofcha had lodged their complaint in a respectful manner instead of how some others complained by wrongfully cursing Moshe or inciting groups to mutiny as Korach did? As we have been taught, parts of Korach's argument were valid, but his application of his ideas were wrong. I'm sure it would have worked out better for Korach if he went to Moshe's tent respectfully and said, Hashem made you and Aaron leaders, and Hashem knows what he's doing, and I'm not challenging you, but I have a few philosophical issues about equality that are bothering me. Can we please sit down and have a cup of coffee and friendly conversation about my ideas? I won't take much of your time. I know we have to be up early tomorrow to pack up the Mishkan and move to our next camp. Is one of the lessons of the story of Tzlofcha's daughters perhaps a teaching about how to complain in an appropriate manner? I think it's very well stated. I think a very Baal Batashe practical approach. There's no question that there's definitely a lesson in that. That's not only what you say, but it's how you say it. And if Korach had indeed done that, he had questions. That, you know, limud ani nitzarich. Torah is given to learn. If you have a question, you absolutely have to ask. You accept what the ruling is in, but nevertheless, let's understand it. And that was indeed not what Vayikach, Vayispala Korach, as the Targum translates, that he took and challenged Korach. He went to war, rebelled, and incited others. So that's for sure one of the basic answers. And the same thing you see in other situations as well. Even then, Moshe Rabbeinu did not stand up. He fell on his face in humility, and then the whole process for Hashem to demonstrate who he wants as leaders. Because Moshe took Allah Nizik for Nizim and Hashemayim. And the person who's receiving, even if it's coming from a bad place, he has to look and say, what does it mean for me? There's something here, and I need God to reveal to us that we indeed are doing the right thing. But in addition to that, you find like Tzlofcha also by Pesach Sheni, the Loma Nigora that came from the anguish of their heart. When it comes from a sincere place and is done respectfully, that's when Hashem responds. If you're doing it in an arrogant way, with wrong intentions, you don't feel the anguish of the heart, it's a whole different story. So obviously it's case by case, but clearly it came to the Bnei Tzlofcha, and similar to the people who were said that they were Derech Rechek or Tmeya, Pesach Sheni, they were both granted. And we learn much from that, of how our prayers can change things above. Like in those cases, something new was added. A Pesach Sheni, Chalukah Sa'aretz to the women, the daughters of Tzlofchad. Yehi Rotzen, it says, when we daven, you can create a Rotzen Chadosh, a new desire, a new change in God's plan. How that creates change is a discussion, say, for Irkrim Chassidus brings it. It's not for now. But the point is, yes, there is a way. Moshe Rabbeinu did it also. He did it respectfully, but very firm. He could say he had chutzpah when he stood up to God after the Chet HaEgel and said, I want you to forgive them. And if not, erase my name. And before that, he broke the tablets that we'll talk about soon. So you see there are ways and there are ways. So very good points. Thank you for that. You see it also among humans. You come to something, let's say you have a complaint or you have a question. If you come to someone with a grievance and a complaint in an angry, aggressive way, usually see what happens. Come in a pleasant way and say, I saw this, I have a question. Respectful, and so on. You get a different response. Kamayim aponim laponim kein lev adam la'adam. It's all about the words from the heart enter the heart. And the main thing is to get the ego out of the way. Get your ego out of the way. You have a question? Fair. Good question. It's not about you. It's not about the other person. Let's not personalize it. OK. Okay, one more question and discussion in Parsha Pinchas. What do we know about Joshua, the assistant of Moshe Rabbeinu? Was he considered a tzaddik? Did he write any books of Chidushim on the Torah? Or was he chosen as the new leader due to his military experience? So in this week's Parsha in Pinchas, we find that Moshe says to Hashem, we need to appoint my successor. And that's when Hashem says to take Yeshua, Samach, and Moshe ordained him, preparing him to be the leader after they would come to the enter Eretz Yisrael. So a lot is talked about Yeshua. Chassidus brings from many different places. It's also brought in Kabbalah and Bechlal and Svarim and Farshim. You look at Yeshua, you see two stages in his life. The Lo Yomish Metecha Eil stage, where he never separated himself. He never left the oil, the tent of Moshe, referring to his total and utter dedication and devotion to Moshe Rabbeinu as a student. In that sense, I'm a Kabbal, complete recipient. He wasn't Mashpia at all. Then comes stage two. After Moshe's passing, Achri Mois Moshe, it says, then he became the Manig and the Mashpia, the next generation. Moshe Kibbol Torah Mesinai Umesara LeYeshua. Yes, with the ordination of Moshe, but now Yeshua is now the leader. And he has the power of Moshe within him, as the beginning of Yeshua tells us. And that came his generation, the next generation, to continue. So now he's a Mashpia. Chazal tells us Moshe is Kipnei Chama, Yeshua Kipnei Levona. Moshe was like the face of the sun, and Yeshua was like the Levona. So Moshe, in the language of Chassidus and Kabbalah, Zoh, Moshe, and Malchus is Yeshua. Malchus has two levels. When Malchus is Mekabel from Zoh, from the Mashpia, like a student who's turning and receiving from his teacher, absorbing. Then comes stage two, where he processes and begins to be Mashpia, Malchus, as it comes down into Biyah, the language of Chassidus, into the lower worlds. So each of us begin by first being a Talmid, a student. Then what's expected is that the student should become the teacher of others, not just to remain, but maintains the bittel. But now when you become a teacher, there is a certain, we call disconnect is sometimes the word used in Chassidus. I'm actually teaching about this now in Ayin Beis. And this is a good opportunity to invite you all to my daily Ayin Beis class. Go to chassidusapplied.com or ayinbeis.com. You can find all the details. So we're learning mamash about this. It's based on a maimer of Nodim B'Mishnah Yeniginosam that the Alter Rebbe said at the wedding of his grandson, Baruch, son of the Mittler Rebbe. It was a Sunday night during the year Tovkuf Samaches, essentially the equivalent of 1807, around Parsha Vayetze time. Be essentially October, November. And powerful maimer talks about these two levels. Malchus and Moshe in Yeshua, rather, and explains a lot of different verses about Yeshua, but especially the ones that we're learning now. So these are two stages. And then Yeshua wants, even as he's Mashpia, he wants to always reconnect to the Moshe. And that's why the Malach, the Sartzva Hashem that Hashem sends to Yeshua that he receives, to help reconnect to Malchus as it is in Atzilus, that Malchus and Biyah connecting to Malchus and Atzilus, as he explains there. So in that sense, that's a brief summary of Yeshua's role. We also know Moshe prayed for Yeshua when he went as the Meraglim, and his name itself has the words Yeshua and Yehoshua, Yudkei, and so on. So you see that connection. He was considered a tzaddik, absolutely. He's considered a Rebbe. He's considered a Nasi, a leader. Did he write any books of Chidushim and the Torah? Well, the Torah is, at the time, Torah Shebiksav was the only thing written. It was in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeshua, there's a whole Sefer Yeshua. Different opinions who wrote it, but the bottom line is it's a Sefer Yeshua. So of course, then they weren't publishing books, but they were writing and teaching Torah, and Yeshua, Mosarli Yeshua. Moshe Kibbol Torah Mesinai, who did he get? He's the next in line. And Yeshua Liskenim Lenevim. So you have the unbroken chain of the Meseder. So that's no question. He had military experience, but that's not the main reason. A Nosi, a Rebbe, is not based just on certain military experience. It's based on his bittel, like we said, Lo Yomish Metecha Eil, and Samach Yodav, Moshe ordained him, put his hands on him, transferred his power to him, the power of Elikus that traveled through Moshe into Yeshua. Okay. With that, let us move to another thing. This week is also going to be Shavuos B'Tammuz. 17th of Tammuz. So 17th of Tammuz, of course, is marked with a fast day, commemorating the five terrible events that happened, as the Mishnah in Tainus tells us, beginning with the breaking of the tablets. The breaking of the tablets. Now, when Moshe comes down from Har Sinai from Matan Torah, 40 days later, sees the Jews had built a golden calf, and he shatters the tablets, Shviras Haluchas. Then he marches back up to ask forgiveness for them. Rashi, at the end of Chumash, says, from Medrash, that Hashem says, Yeshekechech Sheshivartim. When it says, L'chola Eses V'amefsim Asher Osa Meshe, L'enei Kol Yisrael, the end of Torah, to all the miracles and wonders and signs that Moshe did for before all the Eden, what does Rashi say? Shviras Haluchas. And Hashem says, thank you for breaking them. It's a classic sikha, Simchas Torah Tov Shemem Zayin. Never forget it. The Rebbe crying that night before our kofis, explaining, what is this Rashi saying? Of all things, Moshe took the Eden out of Mitzrayim. Kriyas Yamsuf, Matan Torah, 40 years in the wilderness. Breaking the tablets is the Eisus HaMefsim. And when you finish the Torah with this, Torah should be finished, Mesayim B'Tev. And in general, Shviras Haluchas is, we fast because of it. It's considered to be a sad day. What does it mean? Hashem is saying thank you. And briefly, the Rebbe answers, because Moshe breaking the Luchas was not a desperate act. It wasn't a tantrum, God forbid, of anger. It was very deliberate. Moshe knew what it says in the Luchas. Lo yilcha lekim acherim. You should not build a golden calf. The Eden had heard this 40 days earlier, but they had not received the tablets. They hadn't signed the contract. The ksuba was not delivered yet. So as a good shatchan and also a good advocate, he was preparing the ground. He's saying, yes, they heard it. And they said, yes, they said, hein and lav, different opinions. They accepted it, but they didn't get the ksuba yet. So he kept that as an argument to Hashem to forgive the people. So Moshe was doing it out of tremendous avos Yisrael, bigger than everything else, because there he sacrificed himself. And the luchas, breaking the tablets. It's considered to be a tragedy if it falls by accident. And here to break the Hashem's luchas, the luchas that Hashem carved, that Hashem shaped, the luchas themselves, the first luchas. But that's the avos Yisrael. So that's where you see what a real nasi is. So Shivasa B'Tammuz has this paradox. On one hand, yes, we fast, because the breaking of the tablets is still a negative thing. But the deeper cause and deeper purpose is like we lay, Yuhavchi Yom Meil L'Sosin L'Simcha L'Mayidim Tevim. To be transformed, not just to be eliminated, to be transformed to Mayidim Tevim, because then we see, once the love is established, Yom Kippur comes, you suddenly realize the inner power, the inner love that was established after the so-called break, after the betrayal and the violation. The love much deeper, Yom Kippur, the Luchas Shnias, even greater than the first Luchas. So that's a tremendous lesson in life as well, when negative things happen. Now, the main thing that we consider Shivasa B'Tammuz, I don't know if it's the main thing, but it's one of the five, is the breaching of the wall. The walls around Jerusalem. In some opinions, it happened in both temples, both the first and second temple, the first by the Babylonians on the 17th of Tammuz, and the second by the Romans. There's an opinion that first was not the 17th of Tammuz, the breaching of the wall, even though Tisha B'Av was the destruction in both temples. What's the significance of breaching the wall? It's only a wall. But a wall is Asusi Yoglatera, the walls that we build around us. You don't start crying, you don't start worrying once people break into a house. You worry once they break through the door. They're protective walls. And the same thing in our psychologically and emotionally and spiritually. We have walls around us. And as soon as there's a breach of the wall, there's an issue. But the word is v'samach melech bavel, samach. Samach also comes from the word support. Again, the paradox. On one hand, it's a breach. On the other hand, that breach can be turned into a support. Had the Eden done tshuva, everything would have been reversed, and the walls would have become stronger. So it's about also protecting not just our lives and our children's lives and our families, but also protecting the walls that surround them all. And that's the extra measures we take. You don't just protect the child, you protect all the different factors to make sure you never have to come to a problem. Like, think of the very physical body. The fact that we have skin and hair and outer layers protect from infections getting into the body in the first place. So the walls have to be always protected. The walls are the kidurim, the specific stringent guidelines that we follow, that not necessarily is a mitzvah in the Torah, but it protects the mitzvah. You shouldn't even come to a situation like that. You preempt the problem. You don't wait till the problem has already become a monster. So that's one of the tremendous lessons in Shavuos B'Tammuz. Okay. And that's why is it important to mark this day, and what lessons does it have for us today? So we just answered that question, that it's about understanding it's not just an event that happened back then, it's events that are happening all the time. And the lesson for us today, we spoke about two of them. Number one, the depth of love that any negative experience brings out. And number two, protecting the walls, protecting the environment, protecting the being on the offense and not waiting to be on the defense by establishing and making sure our walls and are in place. And that simply means, let's say, for example, in marriage, you don't have to, it's not just about the love between two spouses, it's also making sure that the environment is trusting. And not to do things that potentially can be problematic. Not just not do something that's problematic. Be extra careful, extra sensitive in the environment and the people that come to your home and to other activities that you're doing that nothing should ever blemish or in any way compromise the integrity of marriage. Same things with parents and children, same thing with friends, same thing in Yiddishkeit in general. That's why the Chacham did make siyogim for that reason. So when you love someone, you don't just watch out when there's danger, you just make sure you create all the right guidelines and the right checks and balances to make sure everything is intact. Okay. Being that we're talking about Shavuos B'Tammuz, which of course is a result of on a spiritual level, deeper things, when you say the breaking of the tablets, right away reminds us of other breaking. What does it remind us? If you learn Chassidus and Kabbalah, Shviras HaKelim, the shattering of the containers. Though that's not a physical thing, but it's still shattering. So a question came in, what do we know about, please clarify the relationship between concealment symptom and the shattering of the vessels or containers, Shviras HaKelim. Thank you so much. So briefly put, when we talk about Ein Sof Lifnei HaTzimtzum, we have a seamless, complete, absolute divine consciousness awareness. And there's no room for anything else. Ein Eid Mavadeh. Elokus B'Pshitus is the expression. So there, of course, there's no room. There's no independent consciousness. There's nothing else but godliness. Hoya Ashlei Nivra Elam Ayuhu Shmei B'Vad. Him and his Shemai. So this explains the levels, what Shmai means. Oyer. The higher levels of air, different levels of air. But bottom line, it's all godliness. So of course, the Eibishter can do what he wants, but he wanted it to be in a way, that, according to the Seichel that he himself created. So he made a tzimtzum. In order to create, how could you have tachtenim, as the Alter Rebbe explains in chapter 36 in Tanya, tachtenim begili eidin sofis baruch, which means the helim. Tachtenim doesn't mean lowest physically, but it means lowest in divine revelation, where there's no divine revelation at all to the point that the world can say, Aniva afsiyed me and nothing else. How is that possible in the context of Elokus B'Pshitus? So the Tzimtzum explains that. The Tzimtzum that Arizal explained. Concealment, like a teacher concealing his infinite brilliance to allow room for the student. Now there's the purpose of the Tzimtzum is not an end in itself. Purpose is like the child, the father hides from the child, so to elicit the ingenuity of the child to find God there. Famous examples in Chassidus. But what happens if a child stops looking? So the concealment can lead to all the other problems. Ultimately, the tzimtzum will lead to Shviras HaKelim. Shviras HaKelim means a dissonance between the divine energy and the containers. Because now there is a second state of consciousness, independent consciousness, Kelim. But initially, there's tremendous tension between the two. I sometimes explain that the way to understand it is like a market correction. Shviras HaKelim is almost like the protest of something's wrong. What's wrong? That the divine is concealed. Yes, the kav and the eir is very intense and very powerful, but it's not completely compatible with existence. And that's why there's a shattering. It's like when things are not working in a person's life, something's going to give, something's going to break. But it's Seisalam Nas Livnes. The Shvirus HaKelim is a method to bring together, like we spoke before, that the shattering only brings out deeper love, ultimately, the Yom Kippur. So the shattering of the Luchis can be compared to the shattering of the Kelim. Obviously, it's on a lower level, meaning it's happened on earth. Shvirus HaKelim is more on a spiritual level. But it's associated with it, and the goal is ultimately not to remain shattered, but to use the shattering, the broken heart, to create something even more complete. There's nothing as complete as a broken heart. So that's briefly an explanation of that. Let's move now to a few questions, and then I have a lot of Gimel Talmud follow-up, a lot, about the Rebbe, about our time, and I'm going to try to cover it because I know these questions are very relevant and really bothering a lot of people. So let's use our time wisely here. First, I'll deal with two questions that came in that I thought appropriate. And this is a good opportunity to invite and welcome your questions. We have a forum at chassidussupply.com, completely anonymous, can be traced, so please feel free to write there. You could add your name or email if you like, especially if you want us to communicate with you. But you can also write completely anonymously, which is what we prefer. And as well as other resources, our archives and other resources, you can find at chassidussupply.com. So a few, I will get, Mr. Hashem, to every question, but give me the time, because more questions are coming in than that time allows to answer. So we have a backlog, but I try to keep it either focused by theme or things that seem timely and so on. So, question came in about this. Should I be living out of town? Dear Rabbi Jacobson, I lived in Brooklyn most of my life, but I never felt that I fit in, and I was just spinning my wheels and not growing. 3 years ago, I moved away to a small town upstate. I was attempting to utilize the teaching of the Torah that says if you change your place, you change your mazel. Yes. Shana mokem mishana mazel. I also wanted to live in a different manner where I was a big fish in a small pond instead of a small fish in a big pond. And everything changed for me almost overnight. I met someone and got married. I settled down, bought a house. I haven't got a parking ticket in 3 years. My life changed for the better. But this week in your Ayin Beis class, you taught that the Rebbe Rashab, while explaining Seder Shtalshlus, says it's better to be the tail of a higher level, Zon of Larayis, tail of a lion, than the head of a lower level, Reish L'Shalom, the head of a fox. I feel since Crown Heights is the Rebbe's community, is definitely on a higher spiritual level than my current residence. And when I was living there, I definitely felt low, like a tail, instead of how I feel now, like a head. I want to be in alignment with the Rebbe Rashab's teachings, but there's no way I will move back to Brooklyn because the noise and traffic damage my inner peace and make me angry, and that's not a healthy way to live. Please advise how I can live in alignment with the teachings of Chassidus but remain ahead of a lower level. Thank you. Okay, interesting question. I'm sure many people have this question. So I mentioned before the two levels of Yeshua, two levels of Malchus, but remember something. Let's have a conversation with Malchus of Atzilus. Malchus of Atzilus, when it's in Atzilus, it's in heaven. No pun intended. It's completely absorbing, receiving. Les lamega malchum has nothing of its own. It's completely absorbing what its teacher is teaching. Yeshua, lo yomish metecheil. Not a mashpi at all. As the Rebbe Rashab writes in another maimer, Kenai Yisrael Samach Vov, famous maimer, that this was, we heard from the Samach Tzedek. That's how the Samach Tzedek said. He was not a mashpia at all, complete absorber. Beautiful. Amish by the Rebbe himself. So then why does Malchus come down into Biyah? And for that matter, Neshama in heaven is also delightful. Yofesh Sha'achas Be'elam Haba, Shalkedes Ruach Be'elam Haba, 1 hour of pleasure in Elam Haba is worth more than all the pleasures of this world. So why doesn't Neshama come down? And indeed, Al Karcha Chatachai is forced to come down. Malchus has to go into Biyah because there's something to be accomplished. It's true. In Giluyim, in Revelation, Malchus is higher in Atzilus. When Yeshua is by Moshe, of course it's a higher level, higher connection. But the Kavana is to come down. Nuach la'odem shalei nivra mishanivra, Shammai says, and that's the halacha. Better, more pleasant not to be born than to be born. But that's Nuach. The Alter Rebbe explains pleasant, but Kavana, meaningful, is to come down. So Malchus has to now take the energy that it received and now become a teacher. That's the whole concept of shlichus, to be a shliach and not just stay near the Rebbe. And Yeshua has to now become the leader after the passing of Moshe. So I would say not just because of the traffic and the parking tickets and the noise, you have a shlichus where you are. Oh, you should not come back to Crown Heights. It's not what the Rebbe wants. He wants you to be there. Bring the energy of Crown Heights that you've received there. So when it says in the Mishnah, Le'elim Yehi Adam, Zonav La'arayis, Yehi Adam, Zonav La'arayis, Ve'al Tehei Reish L'Sho'alim, so how does it consist with this? Because there he's talking about, number one, the first stage is you have to first be a Zonav La'arayis, meaning a Makabel. And secondly, even when you become a Reish L'Sho'alim, you have to always remember the virtues and the qualities of being connected. There was a shliach, early years of a shlichus, he couldn't stand being away from the Rebbe physically. So he would come in every few weeks. One day, Rabbi Chadakov calls him in, the Rebbe's chief of staff, and says, "You were sent on a shlichus. Why are you always here?" The Rebbe wants to know. He says, "That's where I get my chayas from. I come here to shep chayas, to draw energy from the Rebbe. Then I go back to the shlichus." Rabbi Chadakov said, "Your job is to be there and bring the Rebbe's energy there." So okay, he had a directive. For months he didn't come, maybe a long period of time. One day he gets a call from Rabbi Chadakov and says, "The Rebbe is asking why he would never see you." So he says, "What do you mean? You told me to be here." He says, "Yeah, be there, but your heart has to be here. And from time to time you have to come to demonstrate that." So it is a dual paradox, if you wish. So the mission is focusing on the value of always being a makabel, a Talmud Chacham. Not a chacham, a Talmud, you're always a Talmud chacham. Zon of la'arayis, you're a makabel. But in the kavanah is you have to go and be a reish l'sho'alim and bring there that energy. And that's why Yeshua ultimately through the malach, as he explains in Ayin Beis, bridges the two. So I hope that was helpful. One other question. Should I indulge my family with materialism for the sake of Shalom Bayis? Maybe it's not usual, but I don't have a taiva for being mamala taiva. Doesn't have a desire for fulfilling desires. Sometimes in the moment something comes up and I give in, but I definitely don't have taivas on a calendar. Taivas are desires. My wife, on the other hand, likes the finer things in life. Besides for the fact it's out of my budget, part of me recognizes that I need to make a keli to expand the budget. Yes. Not only does she like the finer things, but she wants me to enjoy it with her. It's almost like if I don't come to enjoy the experience, then we're losing out on her interest being met. But at the same time, I'm pushed simply not interested in the food activity, nor am I particularly dying to spend more time with her in that kind of environment. Is there an inyan for me? Is there a reason for me to cultivate a desire to spend the time with my wife enjoying taivas better for the sake of an improved shalom bayis? Well, I don't know the details. Oh, firstly, I want to just say, when I hear the tone sounding almost like she's a baal taiva and you're not, I wonder if we looked a little closer if that is indeed the case. So, you know, people, you may think you may have taivas in one area, that you are minimizing. I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying I don't like that juxtaposition. Sounds a little, rubs me the wrong way, to be honest. And because of that, I start wondering, was it this materialism of your wife and you're more spiritual? Or is it that you have other interests? So if you're saying you're a tzaddik or a benyani and she's a rosh of a tevle, that's one thing. I don't think you're saying that, that you are living completely on this highly spiritual level. Even if that was the case, I would say that's where you get married and your wife is your partner and it's about building a home and it's not just sitting in a kollel learning chassidus all day and davening, as beautiful as it is, like I said, lo yomish metecha el, beautiful, but you also have to have, bring it in tachtein. So we're not talking about something forbidden. It doesn't sound like you're talking about things that are prohibited. They're not dvarim asurim. So in that case, yes, I wouldn't even call it compromise. That's what love is. That's what commitment is. You do things together. Your wife enjoys something, if it's a dover shel heter. And adrabi, use it for kedusha. Tanya talks about how do you take a dover shel heter, something permissible, do it l'shem shemayim, in a pleasant way, not in a battling way. She wants to go for a walk in the park. You want to travel somewhere. So use it. Mashem mitzad gover kenanu. God leads the footsteps of man. And to learn something about Hashgacha Pratis. Teach it. But again, not as you're the teacher and she's the indulger. Do it together. Embrace it. Now, again, I'm not sure if I'm getting exactly the nuances because I don't know the details. Like, what is it she wants to do you don't want to do? But I see it on the other hand, a little bittle on your part. I'm talking about the husband's parts. And see, and you'd be surprised. Your wife may be much more spiritual, much more godly than you may think, the way you're posing it. The finer things of life depends on what level. We all know a chassid tries to stay away from moises. Das was mitarnish tarminish, das was megdaf menechnish. Even that which is permitted. But that is usually much more told to a man. Men are not supposed to wear jewelry and other things of indulgence, as women know how to refine it. So maybe you can learn from that. So the finer things in life does not necessarily disturb me as, oh, that's a problem. Budget-wise, yeah, maybe you have to work a little harder. Maybe you have to discuss this as well in a loving way. Again, I'm not seeing here a crisis where your wife is spending so much money that you guys are completely destitute. So I think it's about balance. And also finer things in life. People like a nice home. Turn it into Kedusha. Zekeli Vanveyu. To have something nice and use it in the way of Kedusha. Like the Rebbe told the former beauty queen of Israel, that when it says Shekel Achim Vehevla Yefi, that's only when you don't have Isha Yiris Hashem Hitisal. But when you have Isha Yiris Hashem, then infuses that the beauty should all be used towards Kedusha. So the same idea here, L'Shem Shemayim. That would be my mindset and the attitude I would take toward this. Instead of seeing it as like a battle or compromise and just doing it and begrudgingly and so on. And it may be surprise you that this may actually create a deeper relationship. I remember Shalom Bayis is not just a mitzvah. Shalom Bayis itself is one of the most divine ways of living your life. So that itself is an end in itself. And that brings many other brachas. That's a general response I would take to this. Okay. So now, let us see here. What I have is a whole bunch of Gimel Tamas related questions following up from Gimel Tamas, which I really would like to read. Some of them very heartfelt, some of them are very heart-wrenching, and I think it's appropriate to cover quite a few. I just don't know how much time we have, so maybe I'll just begin. So I spoke about Gimel Tamas, of course, last week, 2 weeks ago, I should say. Yud Gimel Tamas now. So someone writes, I'm a bit surprised you did not reference the Purim Kotan Maimer in explaining Gimel Tamas in the episode that you discussed it. As I understood it, the implication and logical progression of the Maimer is to when there is an absence and you need to dig deep and find Keiches as well as self-motivated, yet still motivated by the tzaddik and abstentia as possible. The Friedrich Rebbe said it in reference to his leaving Russia, that I completely misunderstand it. No, you didn't completely misunderstand it. I mean, I spoke about many things. The fact I may not have mentioned something doesn't mean I don't think we should read into it. It wasn't a deliberate not to mention it. And indeed, the Maimer does talk about matters like that the idea of a helem, like whenever there's a helem, it's meant to bring out deeper keiches. So on the contrary, let's use it, by all means. Let's use that as well as an additional point. I think I did discuss that Gimel Tamas forces us to have to dig deeper. So we have support of the Maimer, by all means. Which also brings me, and I believe, when you're talking about the Maimer Va'ata Tetzaveh, the last Maimer the Rebbe gave out before Gimel Tamas, before Chav Zayin Adar, I should say, also talks about this idea of Nedochim Beretz Mitzrayim and Evdim Beretz Ashur, talking about Agolus when things are very comfortable, but Zayis Chosis Lamoyer, that when you have that pressure, that's what brings out the best olive oil, the best, deepest Keiches within us. So by all means. Okay. Another question. Dear Simon, I watched your recent podcast with interest, especially your questions and answers on the question of the seventh generation. While it didn't seem like you fully answered the question, you clearly seem to be under the impression that we are still living in the seventh generation. My question to you is based on what I know of Jewish history and also common sense. By definition, a generation ends with the death of the leader. To say that the seventh generation is still ongoing post-Rebbe would seem to take the whole notion of a generation out of its normative parameters. Even within Chabad, despite prior possible proclamations or promises by the Rebbe, Rashab, that his generation would see the redemption. Once he passed away, it was understood that his generation ended. Likewise, in earlier times, once the Tzemach Tzedek passed away, Chabad Chassidim took comfort in the publication of Likutei Torah as a mini-Mashiach revelation. Instead of insisting that we're still living in the seventh generation, I see no reason why Chabad Chassidim today can't simply say that while the seventh generation ended, the Rebbe Shluchim program is a sort of mini-Mashiach revelation. In other words, I don't understand why the Rebbe's passing should not be understood along the same lines as the passing of every previous Chabad Rebbe. Just like in previous times, the generation ended with the passing of the leader Rebbe, so too today. Well, this is the beginning of many questions in this regard. Let me just address this, and then we'll conclude. First of all, whenever you talk about these things, we have to also qualify and say an important thing. Tzadikim gam b'misosan kruim chayim, that they're always called alive. Yaakov Avinu lo mes. So to turn the Rabbeim into just humans in that sense, yes, they're human beings, but what they stand for lives on. That's number one that must be emphasized. Number two, the fact that there is no other Rebbe, Hashem didn't send another Rebbe. The fact that the Rebbe said that Mashiach is imminent wasn't just a moment. It's a fact. We don't understand why it didn't happen. So as you know, my approach to this is I don't have answers to all questions. I don't have answers in analyzing here. We could sit mathematically, scientifically, try to figure out when is a generation. My question is only one thing. What am I doing? What are you doing to bring Mashiach and Geula? The Rebbe gave marching orders. Chof Ches Nisni said, Tut Alt Vesid Kent. What are you doing? So instead of sitting and philosophizing, are we in the seventh generation or not? That's the question that presents itself. And I don't mind not having an answer. You think you haven't figured out, fine. But with the tone from this is that it's, like every generation ended, let's go back to normal. No. The world has changed. We're on the threshold. That cannot be turned back. You read the Sikha, listen to the Sikha of Purim Tosh Mem Zayin, and you see. The Rebbe says, it's not just an Eis Rotzen. It's not just a Ketz, like in Tofresh Ches, Kutte Teir. It's a reality that has to be now finalized. Why? The Rebbe says, I hab taken nishken anfer. I don't have an answer. I also don't have an answer. If the Rebbe doesn't have an answer, I don't have an answer. If you want to start debating seventh generation, you know, it's very difficult to answer that question. The Rebbe spoke about once about in Tavshin Nun, which says in the end of Parsha Kisove, that till now, Leid Nusati Lecham Lev Ladas, Ayin Lires, Ezen Lishmeya, that the 40th year is Koy Inish Adaita the Rebbe. And now, Moshe says to the Eden, now you really feel appreciated. And the Rebbe asked, what about all the people that were born in the last few years, not 40 years ago? So the Rebbe said, when there are people in the generation that were there 40 years ago, they tell us of the experience, so it also helps the people who are younger than that. So you could argue, Deir HaShvi, as long as Mashiach doesn't come, Deir HaShvi, anyone who heard the Rebbe, anyone learns the Rebbe, is still an extension of Deir HaShvi as seventh generation from what? From the Alter Rebbe. Yes, we may be technically another generation, but the Deir HaShvi of Chabad Chassidus continues until the Geula comes. You could argue that. Especially if you believe that the Geula will come imminently. Deir HaShvi only, it's not from the birth of the Rebbe. The Rebbe was born in Deir HaChamishi, the Rebbe Rashab's times. It became Rebbe in Deir HaShvi, and became Rebbe's Deir HaShvi, Tovshin Yud. So as long as there's the Tovshin Yud energy, that's Deir HaShvi. You could, if you want a Dafka, go there. But this is semantics. What difference does it make? You want to call the eighth generation, call the eighth. You want to call the ninth. But the marching orders, the mission that we're on, that has not changed. And that's what should be our focus and our emphasis. Now, there's more to talk about. Same thing with Yud Beis Yud Gimel Tammuz, that it lives on. But let's take the energy of Yud Gimel Tammuz, marching toward Yud Zayin Tammuz. As the 3 weeks begin, the Rebbe emphasizes the increase in Avos Yisrael, in Limud HaTorah, especially in the Yonim of Hilchos Beis HaBchira, Beis HaMikdash. Tzim b'mishpat tepada v'shaveh b'zok, a charity, Limud HaTorah, everything, b'kudei Hashem yisharim esam chilev, things that increase in joy in a halachic manner, to transform and reveal the deeper power within the, and potency within these days, and Chedesh Tammuz should become a Chedesh HaGeulah in the fullest sense of the word. Gula Amitis Vashlema. This has been Chassidus, My Life Chassidus Applied. We're here every Sunday, 8 to 9 p.m. Be well. Very Gula Dika and Simcha Dika Chedesh.
This program is brought to you by My Life Chassidus Applied. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at chassidusapplied.com/donate.